Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on the restarting of adoptions of Vietnamese children by Americans.
These are children who previously might not have been able to find a family because not every family is open to, for example, a child with a limb difference, maybe missing a hand or missing an arm.
Americans can now adopt Vietnamese children for the first time since 2008. But as we report today, it won't be a fast process, and it will cost tens of thousands of dollars. And not all Vietnamese orphans can be adopted. Also on the program, we will tell you how you can get a copy of the VOA 2015 wall calendar mailed to you free. We've got an interesting program today to help you learn everyday American English. So, like the adoption process in Vietnam, let's get started with today's As It Is on VOA. After being blocked since 2008, Americans can once again adopt children from Vietnam. Adoptions ended 6 years ago when Vietnam and the United States failed to agree to continue the program. In 2008, a U.S. State Department investigation of Vietnam's adoption system found fraud and baby selling. Foreign adoption service providers were found to be paying Vietnam's orphanages as much as $10,000 for a referral. The orphanages, in turn, forced or paid Vietnamese parents to put children up for adoption. Some providers were making illegal payments called bribes and providing funds for shopping trips to the U.S. for Vietnamese adoption officials. 3 years after that investigation, Vietnam signed the Hague Convention on Protection of Children. It also changed its adoption laws. This led to an agreement between the United States and Vietnam to permit adoptions to begin again. In October, Vietnam's director of the Department of Adoptions told VOA's Vietnamese service that the two countries had reached an agreement to restart adoptions. Nguyen Van Binh said two American adoption agencies had been approved by the Vietnamese and the U.S. governments from a list of 200. The two are Dillon International and Holt International. Dillon International is based in the southwestern state of Oklahoma. It also has offices in five other American cities. Dillon has sent food, clothing, and other aid to children in four of Vietnam's provinces for the past 15 years. It has also paid for them to be educated. Nellie Kelly is the company's waiting child coordinator.
We're really excited now that adoptions have started back because that's really good news for the children who need families.
But unlike in 2008, the adoption program is limited. Only children whose parents have died or have given up their parental rights may be adopted. And the children must have what are called special needs. They may have medical problems. They may be older than five. and if they have brothers and sisters, they must be adopted together. Ms. Kelly says these children are often not adopted. She says children like this have a very difficult time finding a family because many people only want a healthy baby.
For families who are open to children who do have special needs, this really will be a great opportunity for those children. These are children who previously might not have been able to find a family because not every family is open to, for example, a child with a limb difference, maybe missing a hand or missing an arm.
She says every child needs a family, but it is difficult to find a family for children who have special medical needs. Ms. Kelly says her agency works to match a child with a family rather than trying to supply a child that a family wants.
Our mission is to help find families for the children who need them, not find children for the families who want them.
Christine Cronister is one of the editors of the website AdoptionIntegrity.com. American families who were adopting children from Vietnam started the website in 2006. The editors saw the problems that led to the ending of adoptions in 2008.
Last time, there was no restrictions on what children could be referred, and the Vietnamese government pretty much licensed anyone who paid. There wasn't really, clear standards of what you have to be as an agency to be licensed.
Ms. Cronister is happy that the process has begun again. But she says she knows the stricter rules will lower the number of children who can be adopted from Vietnam. The Vietnamese government says almost 1,300 Vietnamese children were adopted between 2011 and 2013, mostly by people who live in Europe. The Dillon Adoption Agency says it does not know how many children will be adopted by Americans under the new program. It takes about 6 to 9 months to complete the process in the United States. That includes an application, preparation of immigration documents, and an investigation. Then the information is sent to Vietnam. Because the program is new, the agency does not know how long Vietnamese officials will take to make a decision on a case. But it is telling people to be prepared to wait as long as 2 to 3 years. It says the cost to adopt a child from Vietnam is $25,000 to $32,000. Single people or married couples between the ages of 25 and 55 can take part in the program. The couples must have been married at least 2 years, and they must be at least 20 years older than the adopted child. Ms. Cronister says AdoptionIntegrity.com supports the activities of the two approved American agencies. But she says she is closely watching the agencies and the process to protect the families and the adopted children.
We love to hear about kids who have no hope suddenly in a family and their lives turned around. That's the greatest miracle of all.
The announcement that adoptions of Vietnamese children by Americans would once again be permitted comes as the two countries seek to increase trade and improve military cooperation. Recently, we received our supply of VOA wall calendars for 2015. To get your calendar, simply send an email to us at learningenglish@voanews.com. be sure to include your mailing address when you write. And tell us what radio station you are listening to and the time of the broadcast. That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Cruz. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time with another edition of As It Is, here on the Voice of America.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This Is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. South Korea is dealing with increasing amounts of waste from electronic devices. These useless or unwanted parts are often called e-waste. Tons of old computers, telephones, and other devices are often taken to landfills and buried under the ground. Now, some local governments in South Korea are launching special e-waste recycling programs. The city of Seoul throws out about 10 tons of e-waste each year. About 20% of that goes to the Seoul Resource Center, also known as the SR Center. There, electronic devices are taken apart so that valuable metals like gold or copper can be extracted and reused. Ji Eun-gung is the chief executive officer of the SR Center. He says reusing electronic parts is not only about earning profits. He says the goal is to protect the environment. He says our planet has a limited amount of natural resources. Our company contributes to a sustainable society by conserving these materials. Ji Eun-gun says about 90% of what is brought to the center will be used on other products. The increase of e-waste is not only a concern in South Korea. The United Nations says millions of tons of e-waste end up in developing countries. Toxic materials like lead and mercury can create a severe health risk to the local population. The Seoul city government partnered with the SR Center to collect e-waste in 2009. Lee Tae-hung lives in the South Korean capital. He says recycling is also about protecting personal information from attack. But some environmental groups say not enough is being done to limit the amount of electronics sent to landfills. South Koreans keep buying more and more electronic gadgets. Some experts estimate that only 21% of the country's total e-waste gets properly recycled. Lee Joo-hong is with the Green Consumers Network. He says the average South Korean buys a new mobile phone every 18 months. He says companies offer special deals to buy new products. Ji Eun-gung agrees with Lee Joo-hong. He says that consumer behavior is a big reason why old phones continue to appear at the recycling center. But he says he is doing his part to reduce that. He says, I have had this same phone for 10 years. It is what I can do to help conserve our natural resources. He says that more South Korean cities need to start their own recycling programs to keep up with the increasing amount of e-waste. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report.
Welcome. Welcome to This is America in VOA Special English. This week on our program, Barbara Klein explores American folk music, the music of the people.
Good Night, Irene is an example of a traditional folk song. That means the song is so old, no one really knows who wrote it. Hughie Ledbetter, the singer and guitarist known as Leadbelly, first recorded Good Night, Irene in 1932. Since then, more than 100 other versions have been recorded. Good Night, Irene was a huge hit for the Weavers in 1950.
Sometimes I live in the country. Sometimes I live in town. Sometimes I take a great notion to jump into the river and drown.
Folk music researcher Bob Carlin notes the historic importance of protest songs. They help give voice to cultural and social movements, he says. One of the members of the Weavers was Pete Seeger. He was among those who popularized folk music in the 1940s. Later, he wrote some of the best-known songs of the civil rights and anti-Vietnam War protests of the 60s. Pete Seeger could be called the king of the protest song, in the words of folk musician Tony Trischka. Yet his greatest influence may have come from popularizing a song that he himself did not write. "We Shall Overcome" came from a Negro spiritual. As Tony Trischka points out, the original version was called "We Will Overcome." Pete Seeger thought "shall" sounded better. And he made other changes, like adding the verse "We Are Not Afraid" to offer support for the protests taking place across the country.
We are not afraid.
Overcome became the theme song of the American Civil Rights Movement. Folk songs sometimes tell stories about real events. An example is the story of a young man whose last name was spelled D-U-L-A, but pronounced Dooley. Tom Dooley was a Civil War veteran in North Carolina. He was tried and found guilty of murder of his girlfriend, Laura Foster. He was hanged in 1868, yet the case left many questions. The story was retold in poems and songs, including the hit song Tom Dooley, recorded in 1958 by the Kingston Trio.
I met her on the mountain. There I took her life. Met her on the mountain. Stabbed her with my knife.
hang down your head, Tom. Julie, hang down your head and cry. Hang down your head, Tom. Julie, poor boy, you're bound to die. This time tomorrow, reckon where I'll be. Hadn't it been for Grayson, I'd have been in Tennessee.
Well now, boy,
hang down your head,
Julie.
Hang down your head and cry.
Oh boy, oh well,
hang down your head,
Julie.
Oh boy, you're bound to die.
Oh well.
Folk singer and songwriter Amy Spies says the history of American folk music can be imagined as a tree with many branches. At the center, she says, is Woody Guthrie. Woody Guthrie wrote almost 3,000 songs, but he only recorded about 300 of them. His granddaughter Anna Canoni says that was partly because he did not have enough money to record more. He made only one record with a major record company. Yet for all his influence, millions of Americans today remember him for just one song, which children learn in school.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, and I saw above me that endless skyway, I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
The song, This Land Is Your Land, seems like the perfect expression of pride in country. What many people do not know is that it was meant sarcastically, as just the opposite. Woody Guthrie wrote it in 1940 in reaction to Irving Berlin's popular song, God Bless America. In fact, Woody Guthrie first called his song God Blessed America for Me. It was meant as a protest song against private property and the unequal treatment of citizens. This meaning is made clear later in the song, in the parts that most children never learn in school.
There was a big high wall there that tried to stop me. The sign was painted, said private property. But on the backside, it didn't say nothing. This land was made for you and me.
Another verse talks about seeing hungry people standing in line for public aid at the relief office. Woody Guthrie was a voice for labor unions and striking workers and families beaten down by the Great Depression in the 1930s.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you or me.
In the 1960s, folk singers like Joan Baez and Bob Dylan protested the Vietnam War. Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind became a big hit for the folk group Peter, Paul, and Mary in 1963.
How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind.
Singer and songwriter Amy Spies says there are still protest songs being written. She points to the examples of Steve Earle and Neil Young, as well as what she calls more contemporary folkies. That would include herself, a child of the 80s. Amy Spies describes one of her songs as a protest song, but more of a story with the protest quietly built into it. The story is about a girl whose brother is a soldier who gets killed in a desert war. The song is called The Weight of the World.
I still see my brother Michael, pressed and polished, shaking hands down at the store. And everyone had come to see the All-Star hop the Greyhound bus to go to war. He punched me in the arm to say goodbye. It was the first time that I saw our father cry. And I kept all my brother's letters tied in ribbon in a box beneath my bed. And every night I read by flashlight with the covers in a tent above my head. His words said not to worry, doing fine. It was his way of trying to ease my mind while I was trying not to read between the lines. The weight of the world.
A new kind of folk music mixes elements of traditional folk and rock with mostly acoustic instruments. Some call it freak folk. Others hate that name. Whatever you call it, one artist often used as an example is the singer, songwriter, and harp player Joanna Newsom. This song is called Sprout and the Bean.
I slept all day.
People probably think of a folk singer as a fossil from the 1960s, a long-haired, guitar-playing idealist who sings about bringing the world together. But these days, with music production software, digital video, and social networks all easily available, folk artists really can bring the world together.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, or the times they are a-changing.
Our program was written by Nancy Steinbach and produced by Katie Weaver. I'm Barbara Klein. Join us again next week for This Is America in VOA Special English.
And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. Was the loser now will be later to win, for the time.